From Philadelphia, it's Torah Talk. Hello everyone, I'm Michael Karasik, and this week we are reading Parshat Ki Tisa, Exodus 30:11 through the end of chapter 34. So, if you know your book of Exodus, you know that starting with chapter 25, the Exodus is over. There are five parshiot, in which the first two of which Moses gets the commands. He's up on top of the mountain talking with God, and he gets the commandments and the instructions for building a tabernacle. Talked a little bit about that the last couple of times. The last two of which, they construct the tabernacle, and in between those two is our parasha, famous for its discussion right at the beginning, Ki Tisa, when you count the Israelites, literally, Ki Tisa et Rosh B'nai Yisrael, when you lift up the head of the Israelites, Ki Tisa et Rosh. Famous for that, more famous even for the golden calf episode, but somehow not at all famous for the fact that this is the place in the Bible that first uses the term Ten Commandments. And it more or less seems to give Ten Commandments. They are called by scholars the Ritual Decalogue. We've talked about it before on the podcast. I want to look at one particular aspect of that commandment that matches what we call the Ten Commandments, the commandments that are given in Exodus 20, but they're not numbered at all, not counted. And that is the expression, which you can see at the top of the first page of this week's handout, which compares a little bit, not the whole thing, of the Exodus 20 Decalogue, or Ten Commandments, with the Ritual Decalogue of Exodus 34. But one thing they do share is this expression that the Lord is an impassioned God. And in Exodus 34, verse 14, the Lord doesn't merely say he is an impassioned God. It says the Lord whose name is impassioned. He's an impassioned God, El Kana. We'll talk a little bit more about this word Kana in a moment, but for right now you should know it only occurs six times anywhere in the Bible. It occurs in Exodus 34:14 twice. The Lord whose name is Kana is an El Kana, an impassioned God. Once, of course, also in the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, I, the Lord, your God, am an impassioned God. And three more times, once in the remake of the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy 5, and once in Deuteronomy 4, and once in Deuteronomy 6, in the run-up to the Ten Commandments, as Moses retells it, and in the cool-down aftermath of the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy 6. And as you'll notice, in Exodus 34, this statement that God's name is impassioned and that he is an impassioned God is followed by the commandment, you shall not make molten gods for yourselves. And in the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, it follows the commandment, you shall not make for yourself a sculptured image or any likeness of what is in the heavens above or on the earth below or in the waters under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am an impassioned God, El kana. So let's talk again a little bit more about this word kana, whether impassioned is the correct translation or not. First, the grammatical form of it. You can see on the handout, it is a katal with a patach underneath the first root letter, a dagesh in the second root letter, and a kamatz under the second root letter. And these are, according to the grammar mavens, nomina apificum. Nomina, names, apificum is the genitive plural of the word apifex, one who does a work, one who does facio, to do, an opus. So these, in plain English, are the way you call someone by the name of their profession. E.g., quoting from the grammar paragraph here, tabach, a butcher. They might also have said ganav, a thief. Oh, they do say that, okay? Dayan, a judge, is one that will be well known right now. Charioteer, horseman, a workman, harash, and there's some adjectives too. This is how you describe what you do for a living, what you do professionally. It's a profession or vocation that characterizes you, that you identify with. And God's characterization of himself is as kana. We turn to Nachum Cerna, who says, the Hebrew stem kuf nun aleph, in its primitive meaning, seems to have denoted to become intensely red. Because extreme and intense emotions affect facial coloration, the term came by extension to express ardor, zeal, rage, and jealousy, which is the old-fashioned but perhaps more common translation for this Elkana, a jealous god. Back to Cerna. It's used in a variety of contexts, even with God as the referent. The limitations of language necessitate the application to God of phraseology that typically belongs in the human sphere. The rendering a jealous God understands the marriage bond to be the implied metaphor for the covenant between God and his people. God demands exclusive loyalty from Israel, and according to this interpretation, his reaction to their infidelity is expressed in terms of human jealousy. Should be noted, however, that the form kana is used in the Bible solely of God, and I would add solely in the context of these Ten Commandments, these three different renderings of the Ten Commandments, never, says Cerna, of a human being, a distinction that testifies to a consciousness that the emotion referred to differs qualitatively from the human variety. I'm not so sure that is correct, and I think I know where Nachum Cerna is coming from, and I think Jeff Teague is going to tell us so. He first points out about our passage, Exodus 34. This passage goes beyond chapter 20 in stating that the Lord's very name is impassioned, meaning that jealous indignation is another of the qualities embodied in his name or essence. This is possibly a play on the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, equating its root He-Vav-Hei with He-Vav-Yud, used in Arabic, with the meaning passion. And back in chapter 20, T.A. commented, in the biblical view, this is an aspect of his passionate involvement with human beings, not a character flaw. But post-biblical commentators found the implications of divine jealousy troubling, and Maimonides interpreted the term as merely an anthropomorphism based on the necessity of borrowing terms from human experience to describe God based on his actions. William Propp has a very clever comment that I really want to believe is true, which is that jealousy, kana, also resonates anagrammatically with the Lord's disinclination to clear abusers of his name. Nake, lo yanake, nake, more or less the reverse of kana. I kind of like that, and I would like to think that our writer had that in mind, but I don't really believe that, I guess. Too bad. Here's Robert Alter, who has something interesting to say and boldly translates, "You shall not bow to another god, for the Lord, his name is capital J, jealous. A jealous god he is." Drawing on his little Yoda language thing there, "A jealous god he is. His name is capital J, jealous," Alter says. The fact that the very next verses three times invoke the metaphor of whoring to represent idolatry strongly argues for a quasi-sexual sense of jealous rather than impassioned. The God who has chosen Israel implicitly represents himself as Israel's husband and lover, metaphor that both Hosea and Jeremiah will make explicit. And when the Israelites betray him by worshiping other gods, they go whoring. The Hebrew word is zonim. Their unfaithful as an errant spouse is sexually unfaithful. So at Exodus 34:14, Alter translates, as we said, "His name is capital J, jealous, a small j, jealous, capital G, God, he is." But in Exodus 20, God has a small g, and Alter explains in his comment there, the word God here is not capitalized because the Hebrew employs the generic term El. This, the Lord is saying, is the kind of small g God I am, and you had better take that to heart. This might be the right place to say that if this kind of metaphor makes you angry or uncomfortable in some other way, you may have to spend some time thinking about how you are going to interact with the Bible, because this metaphor is extremely common. Alter mentioned Hosea and Jeremiah, and those are by no means the only places where this metaphor is part of the Bible. Well, going back to Tige's comment that this might be possibly a play on the Tetragrammaton, equating its three-letter root, hey, vav, hey, or hey, wow, yud, with the meaning passion, I'm indebted to my friend Johanna Markind, who reminded me of an article on the Torah.com by a scholar named Israel Knoll. And the link to that is also on the handout. And here are a couple of paragraphs from it. When Moses asks God his name, God first answered, this is back in Exodus 3, of course, God first answers by saying, I am what I am, and even follows this up with, tell them, Eheyeh, I am, sent you. The word Eheyeh, I am, sounds very much like the Tetragrammaton, which has a yud instead of an aleph at the front of it, and it's meant as a play on words, explaining that Yud Kei Vav Kei's name means he will be or being. Nevertheless, this interpretation does not reflect the original meaning of Yud Kei Vav Kei, and you may be thinking, right, it's not a kal, it's a hefil. It's a vowel in that first syllable means it's hefil. It's a causative, the one who brings into being. But that's not where Knoll is going. In 1956, he says, Shlomo Dov Goitein, parenthetically an Israeli scholar who taught at Penn and who is world famous in the world of scholarship for his book A Mediterranean Society, based on the material from the Cairo Geniza. Goitein, says Knoll, suggested that the name derives from the Arabic root he, wow, yud, and the word hawaya, which means love, affection, passion, desire. He connected this suggestion with the passage in Exodus 34, in a set of laws known by scholars as the Ritual Decalogue. Moreover, according to Goitein, this exclusivity demanded by YHWH goes back to his appearance as a god among nomadic Arabian tribes. And if you don't think that YHWH appeared as a god among nomadic Arabian tribes, I suggest you have another look at Deuteronomy 33, verse 2. One of the places in the Bible that does seem to suggest just that. So maybe saying, as Exodus 34:14 does, that the Lord's name is Kana, is not a pun or a play on words, but a real derivation of that name. And as Jewish tradition likes to say, mimicking David in the book of Samuel, Kishmo Kenhu, the Israelite God with this four-letter name is Kana by name and Kana by nature. I'll be back with you next week for Parshat Vayakhel. Until then, this is Michael Karasik saying thank you for listening.